this week's edition of Education Transformation with Lee and Kate Ridge. Kate, where have we just come from?
Yes, so today's episode has been recorded live in the Adelaide Botanic Gardens.
It has, and you'll hear us state that it's a beautiful day, beautiful location, but it soon turned, the weather turned bad on us, didn't it?
It certainly did. It wasn't kind at all.
So you'll hear a little bit of wind, you'll hear a little bit of background noise, but that is out in nature, that is the Botanic Gardens.
So we hope you enjoy this week's episode as we discuss apprenticeships, traineeships and micro-credentials. Nellie, today we're sitting in the Adelaide Botanic Gardens. It's a beautiful day, it's a beautiful location, and our listeners might be wondering, why are we doing an education podcast in a botanic gardens? Perhaps you'd like to enlighten them.
Adelaide Botanic Gardens, it's a fantastic location. I think any botanic gardens is just a great location to go and reflect and gain some perspective in life. And we could philosophically just sit here and gather our thoughts. However, back in 1986, I commenced my working journey here at the Adelaide Botanic Gardens as an apprentice.
A horticultural apprentice.
So it's all those years ago. Hence the topic of what we're talking about today, which is...
So we're going to be looking at apprenticeships, traineeships and micro-credentials, one of the new opportunities in training.
What are the benefits of undertaking a apprenticeship or a traineeship?
Well, I think I'll leave the apprenticeship side to you because you actually experienced the apprenticeship firsthand.
Sure.
So traineeships are a little different in that they're shorter than a traditional apprenticeship, and they cover a lot broader industries rather than skilled trades. They can cover a lot broader things, so it might be administration, business, retail, hospitality, healthcare. So it's a lot broader than your skilled trades apprenticeships.
Yep.
They tend to be shorter, sort of 12 months to 2 years.
Yes.
But again, it's based on a vocational education qualification. So anything from a Cert 2 through to probably a Cert 4.
Yes, and often associated with significant funding, at least within Australia, within state government jurisdictions. So at the moment, there's a great push in South Australia for Skilling South Australia, which is a huge funding initiative by our state government, and a great opportunity to fund and to gain further qualifications, whether it be in office administration or in some of the trade areas as well.
Yeah, I think the important thing for people to note, especially if they haven't come across traineeships or apprenticeships before, is that it's a work-based training program. Yes, there are formal components to the training, as in all training. There might be classroom or campus attendance from time to time, but a lot of the training is hands-on on the job.
That's right, usually undertaken by a block release.
So do you want to talk about your experience of being an apprentice and how that played out for you and your career?
Yeah, okay. So initially, at the age of 17, I undertook a pre-vocational course. So that was a six-month training course in intensive horticulture and commercial landscaping and alike. And at the end of the 6 months, I was determined, that's it. I've learnt all I could need to know, and I'm about to go and open my own business, and away I'll go. I'll be successful. State government advertised for an intake of horticultural apprentices. I thought I'd go along and see what the interview journey was about. So I went and I elected to participate in the recruitment journey. And there were quite a lot of people that had actually applied even for those two positions. So I was surprised at that. And I graced them with my presence at 17. And I sat in the...
The world is your oyster at 17, isn't it?
I sat in the state government office, and there were 8 people gathered around that interview table ready to interview me in a boardroom with, you know, Chesterfield chairs and a like, very, very traditional setting. And I was taken aback by that. I thought, wow, you know, this is pretty important. This is good. So fortunately, I was one of the last 2 recruited for that intake. So it was fantastic, though, because over the next 4 years, it had its challenges as well. But over the next 4 years, the state government, I was employed by the state government, and I worked here at the Adelaide Botanic Gardens for 6 months. And then from there, I transitioned into various state government roles, including, you know, highway landscape design developments and things like that, and new real estate developments and things that were initiated by the state government. And it was just it was a really interesting, eye-opening opportunity. In that time, you'll start off on the bare minimum of money, so just enough to run your car, really, and that's all. And you go to trade school, and you undertake the training through the training provider. And for me, that was on a Tuesday night. Religiously for the next 4 years, that was on a Tuesday night. I had to give them my own time. I worked full-time, and then I had to undertake the academic studies during the week in my own time as well, so homework every night. In the first year, the quality of work was very ordinary, because you had no skills, really. You get paid, I think I got paid an additional $20 a week, so I started off on $121 a year. And I ended up on about...
Sorry, a week or a year?
A week. And I ended up a couple hundred dollars richer by the end of my apprenticeship per year, per week. So you're not in it for the money, that's for sure. But in the third year, I completed my formal training and I received my Certificate 3 in Amenity Horticulture. And then you continue to work for the employer, which for me it was the state government, for another additional year. And by doing so, you're paying back the employer for the investment into your career. So I gained a great deal of knowledge because I could engage with all of these tremendous horticulturalists who had worked in New York and all over the world in relation to botany and soil science and, you know, all sorts of best practice. So it was a wonderful experience, but it was hard.
And it was a long time. 4 years when you're 17 seems... like a lifetime.
Long time, yep.
But the other point you raised that was really interesting is the commitment of the employer. So they're making a commitment to a young person, or most of our apprenticeships in Australia are for young people. There are some mature age ones. But 4 years is a big commitment from an employer for training someone.
You know, that can be a challenge because a lot of businesses will have, you know, really productive times and then they'll be confronted with unexpected financial challenges, which did happen for me at one point in my apprenticeship, where one of the organisations really did struggle and I was transferred to another department to continue on with my apprenticeship, thanks to the state government. So out of my control as a lad. But so that's something that they do need to consider, and that it is a long-term investment. And I suppose that's why traineeships are much more appealing today.
Why would someone choose an apprenticeship or a traineeship over these traditional pathways as opposed to an apprenticeship or traineeship?
That's a really important question, which I hadn't thought of. That's an excellent question, because what you're doing is you're developing your skills and your knowledge over time, which cannot be underestimated. So your apprenticeship or your traineeship occurs over years. You could go and you could secure your Certificate 3 within 12 months, and you'll walk away with very limited knowledge. I'm sorry, but you will. You'll walk away competent, but you'll walk away competent in that you have to think everything through, and you certainly won't have the plant knowledge as you know, the technical skills that you would when you complete your indentures as an apprentice after 4 years.
So what does a graduate of a Certificate 3, Certificate 4 in horticulture look like when they've done an apprenticeship? So we're talking about traditional, they come out as a competent novice. What would they look like at the end of their apprenticeship?
Oh, they would be very flexible in their mindset. They'd be excellent at problem solving. They would have skills and knowledge that can't be learnt in the classroom. Plant operation skills, you know, those technical skills that you just will never ever, you might be able to undertake a certificate or a unit of competence in that area, but the problem solving skills are the difference, because it's undertaken over time. And this is something that that if you take the traditional or the just purely the academic pathway of getting your qualification, that you just won't develop, because it's not occurring over time. Mm. It's, in many ways, the learning journey should occur over time, as well as the assessment journey.
Yeah. So the graduate outcomes they'd be much more independent in the workplace. They would have workplace communication skills. They would have, you know, time management skills, as well as all the technical skills that they've learnt either on the job or in their traditional training when they attend campus.
That's
more like what the graduate would come out with?
That's right. That's right. And they'd work with very limited supervision.
Yeah.
That's right.
So great benefits for future employers as well to employ someone who's been an apprentice, because I've actually been in the workforce for quite a long time.
Yes, if someone has completed their apprenticeship, so they're indentured, and also on top of that they have their Certificate 3 in Horticulture, as opposed to someone having a Certificate 3 in Horticulture, a recent graduate, I would always recruit the apprentice because of the strong problem-solving skills that they have.
So what do you think are the reasons that apprenticeships have been on the decline? Because there's obviously great benefits for a person to do an apprenticeship, as in their work outcomes at the end. And I know you talked a little bit about, you know, you weren't paid particularly well and you didn't always have great experiences every day. But over the long term, you came out with a great career option. So what are the challenges, do you think, for people taking up apprenticeships?
It's hard. You know, as an apprentice, you're working... Generally, apprenticeships are undertaken within the trade area, so technical trade qualifications. And those environments are already hard. You know, whether you're a plumber or whether you're an electrician, you know, you're crawling in crawl spaces and, you know, confined spaces, or up on rooftops in extreme weather conditions, or, you know, horticulture, exactly the same challenges. From my experience was the employer was resistant to committing to the four-year journey because they didn't want to pay out for 4 years. They wanted to be able to hire and fire after 2 years. That's what they were happy with.
So there's actually a shortage of apprenticeships being offered to people.
Very much so. That's right. That's right. And it's really driven by industry. If the truth be known, in many respects, it's driven by industry because traineeships are much more appealing because of their flexibility.
So let's now look at how a training provider is part of that apprenticeship journey. So vocational education training, the apprentice comes out with a qualification. But what's the training provider's role in that?
The training provider will sit down with the apprentice and with the host employer, and they will present a training plan. So they'll present a series of units of competence and say, this is what we recommend, and this is why.
So there's a partnership relationship between the student and the training provider and the employer?
Absolutely. Triangulation. That's right. And so once the journey starts, the apprentice, let's say, will come in once a month for 1 day's training or 2 days' training. And then it's also the part of the responsibility of the training provider to go and visit them on the worksite. And I used to do that once a quarter. So I'd go and visit all of my apprentices out in their worksites, catch up with all of their employers, show my face, make sure there's a working relationship there, that there's trust there, that that they know that they can come to me at any time and ask for guidance about the next unit selection or the next subject, or how do we go about paying for this or that, and you know, we would be having that trusting relationship to assist them through that journey. So very important.
Yeah. So they're another support to the young person undertaking the apprenticeship.
Very much so, yeah. Communication shouldn't be underestimated, yeah.
Well, let's just have a quick comparison as well, perhaps, to traineeships. They usually get a Certificate 3, so they're not higher-level qualifications, and they tend to be delivered over the 12 months, but the trainee is also working as well. It may not be full-time. It might be a few days a week, or it could be full-time, as in you did your apprenticeship and then do training outside as well.
Yep.
So it does sound very, very similar.
Yes. Yes, I think so. And at the end, traineeships often result in that almost like a streamlined process of employment moving forward in the organisation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is not always the case with an apprentice.
And traineeships can be offered to existing employees.
Yes, that's right.
Well.
That's right. Because it encourages them to engage with the lifelong journey of learning. Yep.
All right. So let's move on to this new thing that's come out in the last few years called micro-credentials.
And as we do, Kate, come with me and I will introduce you to this fantastic bicentenary greenhouse, glasshouse here at the Botanic Gardens. because it is perhaps a little bit quieter and will escape the wind around us.
All right. Okay, so we've made it into this beautiful greenhouse out of the wind. It's much calmer in here, which is quite pleasant.
Yes.
So tell us about micro-credentials.
Look, micro-credentials have been around for a while in various contexts, haven't they? So, you know, some would say it's clustered delivery with regards to a series of subject areas or units of competence together, and you're delivering that training to a specific need in industry.
So it's not a full qualification, it's a small course.
That's right, that's right. Others would suggest there's a different definition to it, but really there's some common underpinning issues that do support micro-credentials with regards to however you want to deliver it, really. Yeah. And that is, it has to be an identified industry skills gap.
Yep, yep.
So it has to be something that, hey, we don't want the full Certificate 3 or the diploma, but what we do want is we want these three units of leadership delivered in our organisation. Can you assist us as a training organisation?
I guess because I come from the health perspective, a way of showing that might be we might have nurses, but we want them to be able to take blood, do venipuncture, and yes, that mightn't have been in their course. So that might be a defined need, and they just do that one skill course and get a micro-credential.
Yeah, sure, sure. That's right. That's really all it is. It's a short-term training. It generally will always be certified as well, so there'll be a certificate at the end to demonstrate that, yes, these people have undertaken this micro-credential training. So that will usually be endorsed by the training provider,
yeah,
and it can also be endorsed by state government or a government regulator.
Mm-hmm. I've seen also that, you know, micro-credentials being advertised, not just in Australia, but worldwide on, MOOC platforms,
mm-hmm,
massive,
yes,
online,
yes,
training platforms, and also things like micro-masters. So they're not even a full master's degree, but sort of small degrees.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting journey that we're on in way of micro-credentials.
And in that context, you'll end up with a digital badge or something like that, which is the same as certification.
Yeah.
That's right. The Australian government suggests that within the next 10 years, 40% of all bachelor qualifications will be obsolete and will no longer be delivered.
That's a little concerning.
Because people are opting for this pathway of micro-credentials.
Yeah.
Well, that's their forecast moving forward. So getting back to the definition of a micro-credential, it also needs to be assessed, obviously. So there needs to be an assessment structure and tools in place that are often industry-led.
Right.
So they're endorsed by industry as well about, you know, we know, and I've actually been involved with this, where we know you love to teach the botany and the science behind what you do, but really we want front-of-house sales.
Yeah.
So we want our staff to understand that. But initially, could you please change the training plan to ensure that you're delivering cluster delivery or micro-credentials to support the how to work a cash register, customer service, you know, soft skills, which is just so important today.
Hmm.
So industry-led requests for training to be adapted to their needs.
So are micro-credentials used as initial training to get people into the workforce, or are they more of a professional development tool?
Look, can be both. So they certainly do provide a pathway for people that can't afford time or actually financially are restricted with regards to undertaking, say, a long-term qualification. So they can undertake a short six-week program, say, as an example, to complete their micro-credential training and then have access to the construction industry or whatever. So the white card process is an example of micro-credentials.
Okay.
So it can be in that context, but it can also be that, and the beauty of micro-credentials, and perhaps this is why it's getting to be quite popular, at least there's a discussion point at this point in time, is the fact that When you're in the workplace, you know, we all need upskilling, or we need reskilling, or we want to transfer to a different role. So we may be in training 1 minute and then someone offers us a new role in HR, which is similar sometimes in the context of large corporations. So we may select to transition across. So we'll undertake some micro-credential training to do that.
So it can be to get you into the workforce, it can be to keep you in the workforce, mm-hmm. or to change to a new role.
That's right, that's right. It's a very, very flexible. Again, always industry-driven though.
Yeah.
And so what it does do as well, the benefit of it, is that it supports the transition of school-based students into vocational education and training.
Yeah.
Because if they can undertake some micro-credential training rather than, say, the Certificate 2 level, yeah. which generally is a challenge for school-based students. So if they undertake some micro-credential training, then they can transition into the VET system quite easily, vocational education and training, because some of that training's already been undertaken. And then, of course, you can transition from there technically into higher education, so university-based training, which certainly a lot of our VET qualifications do get recognised through that journey.
So the pathways are very important part of micro-credentials?
Well, that's the purpose of micro-credential, yeah. That's right, yes, to enhance that pathway transition, yep.
It's interesting because it is new and it's still in the process of being developed and embedded into training systems around the world. To see where it will go and how what the uptake will be like long term, whether it will be as the government predicts that micro-credentials will be a boom area in training, or whether the traditional VET and higher education will continue.
Yes, well that's true. It also raises some questions that can't be answered at this point in time in relation to the quality of the graduate that comes yeah. out over time. So, yeah. you know, the next 5 years will answer that. But as an example, if we go back to our original conversation of apprenticeships and the, yeah. and the importance of apprenticeships in relation to it's the learning of skills and knowledge over a four-year yeah. journey, will micro-credentials ever replace that journey?
I agree with you. I think it's going to be really difficult because if you do a vocational education training course in Australia, doesn't matter where it is, you know that graduate has studied the same things mm. and will have mm. the same outcomes. Whereas with the micro-credentials, they can be delivered, you know, by multiple people, multiple training providers, multiple industry groups. So how are we going to measure those outcomes? And how is there going to be consistency across those certifications in each of the micro-credentials?
Quite right. Now, micro-credentials also can be accredited training, so out of a nationally recognised training package within yeah. Australia, or they can be non-accredited training. In other words, training that's been developed by industry experts yeah. to say, hey, this is what we need, and these are the skills we need within the workplace. So again, in that respect, you're actually developing your own learning outcomes and objectives.
Yeah. So you're really designing your own qualification in a way if you do multiple micro credentials.
You are designing your future as a sector, and if you get it wrong, then the next 3 years will be demonstrating that evidence.
So it really is a watch and wait space here on micro credentials.
It really is, you know, and it's a debatable point. There are benefits to apprenticeships, there are benefits to traineeships, and there are also, I can see, benefits to micro-credentials. If it's all managed in a transparent and honest way that benefits the graduate, or, you know, we really want to make sure that it's not a cost-cutting exercise. The quality of training needs to be adhered to.
Mm. I think there is a risk to that, and it could be seen as a quick fix rather than actually getting employees or graduates who have the skills and knowledge. We just want to plug that gap. So I think there's a risk in that, but it also could be really beneficial in that we need to plug that gap. And how do we get these people trained?
Especially if there is no recognised training pathway at this point in time. Yeah. That's where micro-credentials becomes very, very constructive. I was just speaking with some state government colleagues the other day And they're looking at initiating a pilot program that will be endorsed by the state government to see whether, you know, just how successful it can be across a number of industry sectors. So that will run throughout this year. So that'll be a really interesting project to observe and to monitor the South Australian micro-credential pilot program.
And I think nationally and internationally, like getting some standards across the board so that if people do something, you know that it matches what someone else has done, or this credential is equivalent to that.
And
so that communication, I think, is going to be important long term.
Well, well, that's right, because a digital badge is a digital badge unless it's recognised as quality education. That's right.
Well, I have really enjoyed hearing about your journey in vocational education in your apprenticeship. So it's I hope the listeners also, if they haven't experienced apprenticeships before, perhaps think about that as a form of training and traineeships. And watch this space on micro-credentials.
Absolutely. Yeah, really interesting. The vocational education and training sector is really undertaking significant change at the moment. So it'd be very interesting to observe over the next 5 years. Apprenticeships, traineeships, micro-credentials, so many different VET pathways now available. But remember to always look after yourself as a faculty member. And that includes professional development. Jump onto our website at www.transformationconsultancy.com and just take a look at our VET resources and also our consultancy services to see how we can assist you and your workplace.